Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt basketball coach, to join us coming up at high noon. Chris Mason, his weekly chat with us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, so that'll be the fourth and final hour. Don't forget, this Friday, which is May 22nd, that is going to be the 3-year anniversary of the Predators punching their ticket into the Stanley Cup Final. And what does that mean? We have got Game 6 Remastered, where we chronicle the Predators' historic 2017 Western Conference title and their win against the Anaheim Ducks. Pete Weber will have some of the biggest moments. He's going to be kind of narrating this thing. The three of us spoke with a lot of people within the organization, whether it was General Manager David Poyle or President and CEO Sean Henry, and we did interviews with a lot of the players to kind of relive that series, that playoff run, and eliminating the Ducks in Game 6 here in Nashville. We are going to unveil that on the 3-year anniversary this Friday. It'll be on our show. So the final 2 hours of our show will be Game 6 Remastered. So we'd love for you to make sure you tune in, kind of block out your schedule for noon to 2, or actually you can multitask. You can work and listen to this. It's going to be really, really cool, and I can't wait to hear the final product. Can't wait to also talk to Kenny Albert, our next guest. Always good conversations with him. Kenny, how you doing?
I'm great, guys. How are you? It certainly brings back a lot of memories when I think back to the 2017 playoff run. Hard to believe it's already been 3 years, but I was there for a number of those games, including the entire series against the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, we obviously spoke with you many times throughout that journey, whether it was Chicago, St. Louis, Anaheim, and then eventually Pittsburgh. But it was quite a run, and we all remember the atmosphere, and you're going to get all of that. Ryan Johansson is going to kind of take us through. Remember, he got hurt in Game 4 and didn't play the rest of the series, and he's going to talk about that moment and what it meant and what he did watching Game 6. So we'll get into all of that on Friday. It's going to be fantastic. For a guy that's done so many sports, play-by-play, The Last Dance has gotten huge ratings. It just wrapped up this past Sunday. And for people like us doing sports talk radio 4 hours a day, 5 days a week with no live sports, obviously it's received a lot of attention around the country. What do you remember about that Bulls dynasty?
Well, I really enjoyed watching The Last Dance, all 10 episodes over the last 5 Sunday nights. And I was in my 20s at the time and was living down in Maryland, Washington, D.C. area from 90 to 95 during the first 3 Bulls championships, and did have the chance to see some of their games. I did work 1 Bulls game, I remember. I was doing hockey, Capitals home games on television, but I filled in on some Washington Bullet games. So I did actually have the opportunity to work as a play-by-play broadcaster 1 game that Michael Jordan played in Washington. And then I also remember later in his career, and this was not covered in The Last Dance, it ended with his retirement from the Bulls, but I do remember going to see him play in New York with the Washington Wizards when he made his comeback in the early 2000s. But it brought back so many memories of those playoff runs against the Pistons and the Pacers and the Knicks as a sports fan in his 20s at the time. Like I said, certainly watched all those games. Also had the opportunity back in 92. It was sort of my last behind-the-scenes role before I started the job in Washington with the Capitals. I was working for NBC as a statistician and researcher in Barcelona during the 92 Olympics. So I actually had a front row seat to all the games played by the Dream Team. And I actually pulled out a photo album. We had real cameras back then, no cell phones. So I had pictures developed, and I have them all in an album. Most of them are a little blurry. The quality wasn't too great, but I actually found one picture that I took of all three in the shot during warmups: Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird, prior to one of their games in Barcelona back in '92.
Wow. That's really cool. I mean, when you were in the moment, it's one thing to now step back, but when you were in the moment, Kenny, what were you thinking looking at that team? I mean, that's the best team we've ever seen assembled. I mean, it was just – what was it like, though, being in the moment watching that team?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely the greatest basketball team ever assembled, 11 NBA superstars, and then Christian Laettner was the one collegiate player who was added to the roster. And, you know, what I remember, even with a media credential, the Olympics in general are a lot different animal than when we cover – events back home, such as NHL games, NFL, NBA, where we have so much access as media members to the players, the locker room prior to the game or in the morning after the game. You could go down to the court or the field, for example, prior to a baseball game or a football game. At the Olympics, even back then, you're kept at a distance. Even if you're working, you can't get anywhere near the players. There's no locker room access. So I do remember... you know, while I did sit courtside for the games, other than that, you weren't anywhere near the members of the Dream Team, and they had so much security around them. And I remember back then hearing stories about some of them who would be spotted out around Barcelona. I think I actually did walk past John Stockton and his family one day in Barcelona when they were out shopping or heading to a restaurant. But they sort of had this mystical feel to them. They were larger than life, and I also found a photo that I took at a press conference, which I had forgotten about. I was about 15 or 20 rows deep in a huge press setting, but all of the players were there wearing their jerseys prior to the first game. They were all up on the podium, and a lot of fun just to look back and think about those memories from nearly 30 years ago.
Wow, that's fantastic. We had Stanford Steve on yesterday, who's involved with Scott Van Pelt on the late night Sports Center. We had him on the show yesterday, and we were, because he does a lot of stuff when it comes to the gambling, and of course they have their Bad Beats segment that we enjoy on this show. I think it's hilarious, but you know, we were just kind of talking to him. It's interesting tying this all together. What we started with, you remember the atmosphere in Bridgestone Arena, and actually he brought it up yesterday, and we were talking with him about that. I mean, it was a real home ice advantage, so to speak. I mean, it was what everybody was talking about, the atmosphere in Nashville and the atmosphere inside Bridgestone Arena with the fans and how loud and crazy it was. Have you thought about when we come back? You know, there's so much that goes into the, you know, he was just talking about the gambling. You know, they adjust lines because of home court or home ice, or being the home team has been very good at home. If they come back and there's not any fans, how different that will be for that element. What about for your element? Have you thought about calling games with no fans, no atmosphere in the arena?
Well, first of all, when I think back to that 17 playoff run, it was tremendous. Not only the atmosphere and the volume inside Bridgestone Arena, but out on Broadway with thousands and thousands of fans celebrating and congregating and watching on the big screens. And I've had the good fortune of working the West Final in the NHL since 2014, but in particular the last 3 years in Nashville in 2017 and then in Vegas in 2018. It was a similar atmosphere as far as the volume in the arena and the fans outside the arena. They don't have a setting like Broadway right outside T-Mobile Arena in Vegas, but they did have thousands of fans during their series against Washington outside as well. And then in St. Louis last year, it was a great atmosphere. They won their first Stanley Cup. So those three runs in the West did have a lot of similarities, although I'm not sure anything could ever match Nashville, both inside and outside the arena during that run. As far as what we're going to experience when sports comes back, whenever that is, you know, will we be calling games with no fans at the beginning? It certainly sounds like a good possibility. I know the NHL... you know, there have been so many scenarios thrown out in the media as to what might happen, when, and how, you know, all yet to be determined. Same thing with the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball. But I would guess there's a good chance that we may even be calling games out of the studio, at least at the start. Obviously, nothing matches being there and calling the game with the sold-out crowd and all of the crowd noise around you. But, you know, hopefully it's not too long of a period if that's the case, if we do have to call games out of a studio, because it does have the feeling like you're in a phone booth and you obviously can't see as well off a TV monitor as if the entire ice surface is in front of you. So a lot of questions still out there. You know, the main thing at this point is hopefully everybody's health is great and we all stay safe and the listeners as well. I send my best to your entire listening area, of course, but we'll see what happens. I know the fans around North America can't wait for sports to come back. We did have golf and NASCAR and soccer over the weekend to watch on television. So a lot of questions out there. I'll leave it up to people in a much higher pay grade than us, the doctors and the scientists. So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
We're talking to Kenny Albert, and of course, a fantastic announcer across the spectrum. A lot of you have seen him do a lot of Predator games over the years, as we've been talking about, but you've also seen him doing NFL games and Major League Baseball games. And Kenny, of course, you're traveling all over the place. I think I travel a lot, but you're doing multitasking during a lot of stages, even of the hockey season. And so what's this been like to slow life down? This is a different lifestyle for you, probably unlike anything you've seen in years in your career. You're hanging with your family. So how have you tried to take advantage of that time?
Yeah, absolutely. It was surreal and bizarre at the start. This is day 70 at home. I'm sure it's the same for you guys. And you have a four-hour show to do every day. I don't. But have been doing a lot of interviews and podcasts similar to this one. I returned home on Thursday, March 12th. I worked the New York Rangers-Colorado Avalanche game in Denver on the night of March 11th, and that's when the Rudy Gobert news came out and the NBA wound up postponing. And the next morning, the Rangers and were scheduled to fly to Arizona for a game 2 days later against the Coyotes, and that's when the NHL announced the pause in their season. So Thursday night, March 12th, was dinner number one, and tonight will be dinner number 70 here at home, family. But, you know, I think for a lot of us, one real positive has been spending family time that we never usually get to do. And in my case, I've never been with my family for 70 consecutive days. I can assure you of that with the crazy schedule and flying around the country, you know, in particular during certain times of the year when it's real busy. I am home a lot in the summer, but do have work on weekends during normal times. So that aspect of it has been a positive for sure. You know, like I said, I've tried to keep busy doing a bunch of interviews, some Zoom sessions with college broadcast students, watching a lot of television, more so than during normal times when we're all so hectic and crazy. Like I said, enjoy The Last Dance. I've been watching some other shows, some old games that have been broadcasted. A lot of reading and a lot more exercising, to be honest, than usual. We have such hectic lives that you don't often have the chance to do as much as you'd like. I just got back from an hour-long walk, which I try to do every day. We have a Peloton bike here. So I think the family time and the exercise have probably been the two biggest positives to come out of this time period.
We've referenced the Last Dance a couple of times, and you can't watch it without really enjoying some famous calls from your dad, Marv Albert. And I grew up in New York for a time. I can remember your uncles calling games for various teams in the area as well. So you grew up with announcing all around you. And you're not the only son of famous announcers who's gone on to have a great career of your own. But I'm curious, growing up, as you developed your skills, how did you take advantage of your family and their announcing pedigree? And where, how did you try to work around the strategy of people saying, well, here's Kenny Albert. Of course, he's going to get some opportunities here because of his dad, et cetera. And so how did you try to separate yourself from that and pave your own way?
Well, it was a tremendous childhood. When I think back, it was so much fun. I never knew anything different right from my first memories, the 3, 4, 5 years old. My father was a broadcaster. He did the radio at the time for the Knicks and the Rangers, and also was the local sportscaster on WNBC Channel 4. He would do the local sports at 6 and 11 every night. So I did not know anything other than that. I had friends whose fathers had regular 9-to-5 jobs, and mine was away a lot on the weekends, wasn't home very often for dinner. But it was 99.9% positive. I would go to so many games at Madison Square Garden with him, to the Channel 4 studios. I would tag along on road trips once I was old enough, and got a tape recorder for my birthday when I was 5 or 6 for my parents. And from that point on, I knew I wanted to do play-by-play. I was never forced to. I was never told, you have to get into this. It was totally my choosing, and would start bringing the tape recorder to games when I was old enough. And big break in high school when a local cable station came to my school to film a girls' basketball game, and they were not planning on using announcers, just natural sound, and I volunteered. And from that point on, did about 100 games over the next 3 years, and I felt like I had such a head start on any other kids my age at that time who wanted to do this, because you really didn't have the opportunity until college back in the early to mid-1980s. So I think that was a huge part of it as well, just the good fortune of that cable station coming to my high school at that time. But with my father and my uncles, Al and Steve, who were involved in broadcasting for over 4 decades now, they both did a lot of basketball, hockey, boxing, some other sports as well. I joke that when they would come over on birthdays and holidays back when I was a kid, it was like the first all-sports radio station. They would sit around the table telling stories, and I would try to soak it in via osmosis. But to get back to your original question, I wound up in Baltimore, and I've told the story with you guys. Barry Trotz and I were together for 2 years with the Baltimore Skipjacks of the American Hockey League. We were roommates on the road, and remains a good friend to this day, one of the best people I've ever met during my professional career. But started out in Baltimore and then worked 3 years in Washington with Home Team Sports in the Capitals. And I felt like those 5 years really went a long way as far as trying to establish my own identity outside of New York. And obviously there were some doors open, and I was able to meet some connections due to my family and the three sportscasters that I grew up around. But those 5 years were so vital as far as just developing a style and creating my own identity when I lived down in the D.C. area.
You've got an interesting perspective on what we're all going through right now, just being in the New York area, because New York has been hit as hard as any place, really around the world. You know, they've had some serious challenges here. So what's that been like for you to watch every day as the city goes through this and tries to come out the other side?
You know, to be honest, I'm probably taking it all in on television, just like you guys are, as far as New York City goes, because I'm not that far. I'm about 15 miles outside Manhattan in the suburbs in New Jersey, and we're all staying in, you know, the four of us, my wife and 2 daughters. We haven't really been around a lot of people. We have seen some friends outdoors while social distancing and staying, 10 to 20 feet away. But we really haven't gone anywhere. I did go into Manhattan twice to drop off groceries for my mother, who lives in an apartment building. And I didn't get out of the car. She was on the sidewalk. I rolled down the window. So my only 3, I guess, excursions into Manhattan were for that purpose. And what amazed me was the lack of cars on the road. You know, normally it would take 40 or 45 minutes to get into where she lives in traffic over the George Washington Bridge and then down the West Side Highway. All 3 times I went in, round trip, 1 hour, 30 minutes in, 30 minutes out, and that was it. And it was almost like I was watching a movie while I was driving on the streets in Manhattan, because there were barely any cars, and then the few people you saw walking were wearing masks, obviously for good reason, but certainly far from the norm. And there's a town about 20 minutes from where I live in New Jersey, Teaneck, where there was a big, at the start, back in March, a large number of people in that community were hit with the virus. But fortunately, up where I am, again, don't see too many people. When I go out for my walks, definitely maintain a distance. And, again, we'll just hope that everything the doctors and scientists are working on can lead us all back to a normal life in the very near future. But although I live in the New York area, most of what I'm seeing is the same as you guys on television as well.
We're talking to Kenny Albert here with us on Darren Donick and Chase, and getting back to the play-by-play and what you do with your career. I mean, you're one of the rare guys that you do all 4 of the big 4, and I think that that's unique and something that sets you apart from others. But how difficult is it when you're going from doing a hockey game one night to baseball to the NFL to basketball and trying to prep for each of those, whatever assignment that you have? Is it difficult, or is it something that at this point in your career you're just used to?
Probably the latter. Used to it at this point. I love the variety, and there are certain times a year during normal times. Now we might have a collision of every sport once everything does come back. But in October, the last couple of years, I've had stretches of four different sports in about 9 or 10 days. NFL regular season game on a Sunday, baseball playoffs during the week, hockey regular season, and then an NBA preseason game. So those are a lot of fun. You really have to be organized and get the work done in advance. And for whatever reason, I seem to kind of thrive as far as the work during those situations. You just somehow get it done. You run on adrenaline. But again, you know, my goal growing up, I wanted to do hockey on the radio. I was a huge hockey fan. I played club hockey in high school and college. Wasn't very good. I was probably a third line winger who didn't score many goals. My hockey prowess certainly nowhere near Willie on the baseball and field and basketball court, I could tell you that. But that was it. Wanted to do hockey on the radio, and that was my first job with Barry Trotz in Baltimore. And things sort of developed from there. When I worked in Washington, started to fill in on some basketball and baseball games, and then a huge break for a number of us who were still at Fox came in late 93 when Rupert Murdoch stole the NFC football rights away from CBS, who had done NFC games for 38 years. And Fox came in and made a huge offer and decided to go with a couple of veteran crews, Hall of Famers like Pat Summerall and John Madden, Dick Stockton and Matt Millen on the second crew. And then they hired four, you know, at that point, somewhat unproven play-by-play broadcasters. And I'm proud to say that myself, Joe Buck, and Tom Brenneman are still at Fox 26 years later, and Kevin Harlan has had a great run at CBS and Turner after leaving Fox. So they took a chance back then. They took a huge chance on some young announcers, and that was probably the biggest break of all of our careers.
Well, and it's also unique. You mentioned your longstanding relationship with Fox and what you do with them. You did hockey for Fox, and then NBC gets the contract, and so you're also able to do games with NBC. So how unique of a situation is that, that you get to work for two networks?
Yeah, Fox is great about that. You know, there are some others. Bill Raftery, for example, does college basketball for both CBS and Fox. There are a number of other announcers that work for multiple networks, and that's changed. You know, that you didn't really see that happen prior to about 10 or 15 years ago, but things have loosened up a bit for whatever reason. But it really started, the NBC relationship started in 2002 when the Winter Olympics were going to be held in Salt Lake City. And about a week to 10 days before, in late January, I received a phone call out of the blue asking if I would be A, available, and B, interested to work some men's and women's hockey for NBC in Salt Lake. Doc Emmerich, the great Doc Emmerich, and Gary Thorne were scheduled to be the announcers. And Doc had an issue. His dog had a very bad illness at the time. And Doc and his wife own numerous dogs and horses. They're animal lovers and do a terrific job with their animals, training their animals. And Doc did not want to leave his wife home for 2.5 weeks with the sick dog. So I was the beneficiary, and at the last minute got to call Olympic hockey on NBC in 2002, which led to subsequently four more Winter Olympics in 06, 10, 14, and 18, as well as a chance to start doing hockey with NBC around 2010 or 11. So ironically, it all started due to Doc's dog getting sick. And like I said, Fox is great about it. Working for Fox, MSG, and NBC, they all are terrific about the jigsaw puzzle of the schedule that I have throughout the year, and very fortunate to be involved with all three networks for such a long period of time.
Wow, that's quite the story. So I know this is probably like asking, you know, pick your favorite kid, but do you have, is hockey your favorite sport that you get to do play-by-play for, or is it one of the others?
That is the exact line that I use whenever I'm asked. I say that it's like asking which kid is your favorite if you have four kids. You know, sometimes it depends on talking to, who's asking the question. But, I mean, as a kid, hockey was my favorite, for sure. Played hockey, loved hockey. That's all I ever wanted to do. And, you know, I would say hockey and football, it's like apples and oranges. It's really hard to differentiate because every NFL game is so big. Each team plays one game a week. I've done playoff games where there are 40 million people watching on television. So there's such an adrenaline rush as well, you know, at 1 o'clock on a Sunday when they kick off in an NFL game. And I really enjoy doing basketball and baseball as well. Don't do as many games in those sports as I do in the other two, hockey and football. So, you know, again, just lucky to be involved in all of them. There's really nothing like the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, an overtime game late in the series or in a game seven. But also have great memories of calling some NFL playoff games and college football bowl games as well.
Leave us with this, Kenny. If you could pick the next documentary, what would you want to see? You don't have to do it, but you just get to pick the subject.
Wow, that's a great question. You know, we all have spent the last five Sundays watching The Last Dance. I saw there's been talk. I guess LeBron James' production company is thinking about doing a documentary on the Houston Astros situation over the last 3 years. So that would certainly be an interesting one to watch. You know, in hockey, there was a great documentary done on the Edmonton Oilers. It was called The Boys on the Bus back in the 80s. So I've already seen that. It took you behind the scenes. They had cameras following their team around, similar to what the Chicago Bulls went through during the 98 season. So I'd probably have to think about it. But, you know, for sure the Astros would be an intriguing story for most of us who have a lot of time on our hands to watch television these days.
No doubt about it. Hey, thanks for the visit. As always, you continue to be safe, and certainly we'll talk to you down the road.
You too, guys. Always great chatting. Feel free to get in touch anytime. And to you guys and all the listeners, stay safe. And hopefully we're back to talking about actual games and all of the sports that we love real soon.
Fingers crossed. Thank you, Kenny Albert. Appreciate the conversation with him. And he gets it done. Play-by-play man, as you just heard, the Big Four. He does it all. And we appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Many local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are open and ready to serve you during these uncertain times. You can help them out by visiting rocknashville.com. That's rocknashville.com for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and much, much more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Good message right there and a good talk there with Kenny Albert. Willie, I'm going to direct this to you just because we are the elder statesmen on the show, two young whippersnappers. Maybe it doesn't have the same effect. So I saw this on Twitter. I thought it was fun. And the question goes like this. Without saying how old you are, name one thing from your childhood that young people today wouldn't understand. How would you answer that?
All right.
I know I'm putting you on the spot. I realize.
Well, there's
that.
There's a lot.
I just saw
you stumped the Donick.
No, that's just a very unfair question.
It's trying to get one good answer. I'll take an obvious one.
Okay.
And that is five channels. on TV, maybe six.
That is like, very true. Yeah,
I felt fortunate in New York to have you know, maybe more like two or three local stations. So it was more like six channels. But pre cable TV, the options on TV, hard to comprehend for younger people today. Just the options you have to go watch what you want to watch when you want to watch it. So different back then.
Oh, there's no question. Before your first ever cable box, and I'd like to know, because I would say our first ever cable box was in the 80s, right? Probably more in the late 80s. I wonder how many channels we had on that first ever cable box, which was huge.
I remember it well. When we moved to Florida when I was 12 years old, this was 1983, I remember coming home for a couple days. I knew we were going to get cable. The first day or two, the guy didn't get there. I was like, oh, man, we still don't have it. Because I had been to some friends' houses that had cable, and you know they had ESPN, they had MTV. I was like, I cannot wait to get this. So you had it wasn't cordless. It wasn't a remote. You had this thing that had a cord that came out to a box where you could, you know, slide the channel changer up and down, almost like it's hard to describe what this thing looked like. But if you go to the shoe store and you had the thing that measures your foot, it kind of was shaped like that, and where you slide up and down the size of your foot, you would slide the channel changer along. That's how I had it. I don't know how yours was, Darren, but I would say you had like 30 or 32 channels, and I just thought that was the greatest thing ever. You know, 32 channels. Oh, my gosh. This is amazing.
32. Wow. What year was this?
How did you remember that many? I do not remember how many channels. Like, I wouldn't even have said 32.
Well, I don't – that could be off by a few, but it wasn't much more than that. And not every one of the slots had a channel that you got. Like, we didn't have all the movie channels. You know, they were blacked out. So that knocked off a couple possibilities. So I guess, and the cable company, of course, had some flexibility. So if they got another channel for you, that would appear on a slot that you didn't have a channel before. But I just remember all of a sudden you could get TBS and you could watch the Braves. And this is Orlando, Florida, right? We didn't have a team in our town like I did in New York, where you had, even without cable, you had Yankees games and Mets games. And we were just talking to Kenny Albert. You had Marv Albert calling the Knicks games. You had I can't remember if it was Steve or Al, one of Marv's brothers. They called the Nets, right? So you got whatever game was on. Whoever was playing that night, whatever channel had a game, that's what I was watching. You had Channel 11 and Channel 9 in New York. So then you get to Orlando, and you have no team. So I'm like, well, how am I going to watch sports? So that's where we got cable. Then you get your TBS. You get Harry Carey and the channel out of Chicago, WGN. So you have Cubs games. Then you have ESPN and whatever they've got going on. You had MTV when they were showing videos. So that was my heavy rotation there. But I would approximate that it was 30 or 32. But the thing was only about a foot long and real flat box where you just slid the channel changer up and down. So that was 1983, and I bet you we had that kind of setup for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years before we got a remote control that would switch the channels.
Yeah. Some of these things that I can that just pop off the top of my head right out of the gates is things I'm not sure, because I'm trying to think of things that Chase and Marquise or people listening that are more in their demo wouldn't really know. Even if they never experienced it, they would still, like, if I said VCR, like, they probably still know what I'm talking about, right?
VCR was pretty, when I was young, I mean, that was what I watched on. I think it was 1997 that DVD came out. And so
that's
what I'm saying.
That, but it was in the 80s. But I mean, it went on for so long that you would know that. I would say 8-track. Like, was that? Did that make it into the 80s? I guess that was what made it into the
it was
late
hanging on
80s,
by a thread
or early
by
80s,
then.
And then it was like done, right? Early 80s, yeah. And I guess maybe it was done.
It was definitely fading out by the 80s,
depending on what your uncles were driving at the time. Because my uncles
exactly.
were driving some
yeah,
old
that's
cars.
That's true.
What you, that's how. That's the only time I experienced it. That's the only time I experienced it. If I had an uncle or a babysitter that still had it in their car, and they had a few, I was like, "What's this?"
We had it in the house.
Anything we bought new. We didn't have one in the house.
When I was a kid, we had one in the house.
What about Beta?
Well, Beta is the one that I was coming – I came. That was before VCR, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, Beta was what I was thinking about.
And it was sort of competing with VHS for a long time, right?
But I was going to say it went on for a while too, right? So I thought, well, you guys would probably remember Beta too, I would think.
Well, I never – so – where my grandfather, the company that he was the president of, they had a Beta machine. And I remember I was probably 5 years old and going, what is this thing? And because I was trying to put a VHS in it, and it obviously wouldn't work. And they were like, oh, that's Beta. That's like a different kind of tape. And I'm just sitting there with a deer in the headlights look like, okay, what? I don't understand what that means. That's the only time I had any type of of dealings with a beta. I mean, I don't remember it. I don't if I watched one, I don't remember that. So that was well before my time. It was always VHS.
Skillsy,
did you guys see this?
Skillsy has weighed in.
I was just bringing this up. This is a great one.
So I know, but it is a great one. But I wonder, do they they'll remember that though, right? I mean, because I'm trying to figure out when they haven't been dead that long, have they? Like a rotary phone, like that's a fantastic one.
Well,
but.
Okay. Well, let's. He has two different ones.
Okay.
One's related to the one I brought
the
up.
The one,
there
yes, that one's good one,
right? Because pre-cable TV, you were getting the signal free from, you know, just like you would almost
you
tune in a radio
the antenna.
Station.
Yes.
Right.
Of
you
course.
Had the antenna.
Uh huh.
So that was one advantage when you got the cable or if you got satellite because your reception was better. I remember commercials that would advertise, "Hey, you should get cable not only because we have these great channels, but you're never going to have to tune your picture in anymore." And back in the day, you had to move the rabbit ears around. You would bang the side of the TV. That's
yes.
House point.
Which were huge,
and you would,
right?
Oh, yeah. And of course, you know, the big play in the game's coming up, but all of a sudden the horizontal or the vertical is off, and you're trying to tune it in.
Yep.
Remember the button called Tint?
Yes.
The T-I-N-T button, where the color is a little bit off, and you're trying to get the color right. Hey, why are the Mets uniforms look red today?
That is
there's supposed
fantastic.
To be some orange in there.
We
just trying to tune in and get the right picture. Took a long time, for sure, and that completely was weeded out. And then he goes into a separate category, the rotary phone, of course, with a cord. You know, we can all remember our moms, right, with the phone on the wall where you, before the days of the push button, you dialed the rotary, and then you got your mom hanging on the phone with the long cord.
And you would stretch
you know, twisting
it
around
so
their
much.
Fingers. You're trying to stretch it so you
yes,
can see what
so you
your
can
kids
go
are
further
doing.
Further in the house,
what's,
yes.
What's your little brother doing, and, you know. Yelling at I can't get you know she can't walk across into the next room because she's on the phone, so that's a different time.
For well,
sure.
We always wanted to stretch ours out, just keep stretching and
oh,
stretching,
of
so
just
we could take
how long will
further
this go?
And
yeah.
further in the house, and we could go in different rooms with it. I mean that was sometimes a stretch, but yeah, the rotary phones, you know, hanging on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Those like I know you guys. Probably don't.
My grandmother had one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like up until when?
My grandparents had the same rotary phone the entire time I knew them.
She had it a while.
From the time that I can remember first going to their house, they stayed in the same house in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, until they passed away. And they had the same phone in their living room, the rotary phone. It was unreal. Never changed.
It's either usually in the kitchen or the living room, right? That's usually the two the two hot spots. I think the best one.
We've hit on something because people want to weigh in on this.
Yeah,
yeah,
Hal,
this is good.
Hal said the bunny ears and the television set, there's no way you guys remember that. There's no way you remember the answer.
No,
so that is the best answer. The rotary phones is excellent, but I figured you guys would probably – have experienced that, like pay phones. I guess they didn't go away long enough for you. Probably still experience pay phones.
I'll say this about rabbit ears, because you guys tell me when I was young, we had cable, but it was only in certain rooms. And so it was such a big day that I got a TV for my room. I didn't have cable in my room, so I had to use an antenna. They weren't like the traditional rabbit ears like you guys are talking about, but I had to use an antenna if I wanted to watch anything other than a VCR. So I did have that.
Interesting. We've got some people that want to weigh in. Tony, what do you remember? How would you answer the one thing from your childhood that young people today would not understand?
I'm soon to be 62, and back in the day, you could pick up your phone and call, just like you tell the operator, Alpine 605 or Alpine 5740, and they would hook that line up. That was when I was a kid. And we didn't even have to dial like 832, whatever, whatever. And then
so you had the operator?
Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
Operator to hook it up. I was a kid. And you would say, it'd be Alpine so-and-so number, and they would take that little cord. Remember the Ruth Ann Buzzy or whatnot on Laugh-In doing the switchboard? Seriously, that's what it used to be like. And another thing, Willie, y'all talking about on the cable boxes, remember, everybody, if you knew somebody had a cheater box or a hot box, oh, man. And you let a pay-per-view fight come on, and you'd go over to their house, give them $10, and watch them. You'd watch the show, you know, the fight on their TV that they were cheating and pulling, you know, cheating cable company by having a hot box. Oh, it was great times, and that was, you know, that was back in the day. And, Darren, yeah, you're right about the old rotary phones. They mounted on the wall. And, you know, no kids today wouldn't even know what a phone booth is, guys. Go to a phone booth and have to drop a quarter. If you had a quarter, you got to talk like 8 minutes. On a dime, you got to talk like 5 minutes.
That is very true.
And everybody got madder than hell when they made everybody go all payphones with a quarter.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, the worst thing was waiting in line, right, for a payphone. It's like, hurry up.
Yeah.
Let's go. I got to make a call.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Tony.
Guys, thanks.
Appreciate it. Well, I don't even remember the operator picking up the phone.
What's a party line? Because somebody on the text line said phones with a bicycle boy said phones on a party line. I have no idea what that is.
Party line. I'm not sure.
I have to be refreshed on that one myself. By the way, some people, we got to give our man Greg credit. He's come up with the cable box. That looks very close to what I have.
Yes.
He's tweeted, that looks very close to my first cable box there.
Is there any explanation on the party line when it comes to the phones? I'm not getting that one.
We need a little help on that one.
I'm looking it up right now. A party line was a local telephone loop circuit that was shared by more than one subscriber. There was no privacy on a party line. If you were conversing with a friend, anyone on your party line could pick up their telephone and listen in.
What does it have any time frame for that? That sounds like older than
this
80s.
This looks started in 1878.
Is this Peaky Blinders?
I don't know.
I'd say very few of us can understand that one.
Yeah,
By the way, Willie, Peaky Blinders,
okay,
they pick up the phone and they do that, right? Tony was saying.
By the 1980s, party lines were removed in most locations.
The 80s?
Yeah, they could not support new technologies and subscriber-owned equipment such as answering machines and computer modems.
We're going to have to give Tony a lot of credit for sparking a lot of more good ideas here. I've got a good picture.
We got people
on the
text line.
Dig it up. Oh, yeah. Keep it coming. 737-1025. Yeah. I've got a picture of me, Hal Gill, and Chris Mason in front of an awesome phone booth, which, of course, no longer in service up in Montreal. But, I mean, when is the last time you walked across a phone booth?
Yeah, I haven't. I've seen empty ones where the phone has either been removed or
it's been turned into something else, right?
Yeah.
It seems a little crazy that we all used to share public phones, especially in these times, right? Somebody would hang up a phone and then you would just pick up that phone and use it yourself. I mean,
And you're standing outside the phone booth waiting for the guy to wrap it up. You're like, hey, let's go. Wrap it up.
Yeah. I mean, keep this in mind, too.
Get on there.
I didn't have a cell phone until I was a freshman in high school. Which today, now, kids have them, you know, way younger.
Yeah. Let's go to Daryl. Daryl, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Well, I'll be 60 next Friday, so I've got all of you beats. I can relate to everything you're talking about. And party lines, basically, where if you picked up the phone, there was a good chance that the people who were on your same trunk would be on the phone at the same time. So you could use it like a conference call to talk to those people if you wanted to, but chances are you didn't know them. But by the same token, if you wanted to have your own call, you'd have to wait until they were off. But that was kind of an interesting change of technology. And the precursor to cable was actually these six foot diameter satellite dishes, which you still might see out in the countryside here and there.
Yes.
But people would, and they cost a fortune. So going back into like the '70s, I remember they cost like $3,000 or $4,000. So they'd be probably like $20,000 today.
And they were huge.
They were like 6 feet in diameter, and they had all kinds of technical problems, and then they didn't maintain their you know, the trajectory got screwed up and people always had to get them worked on. But you didn't have to subscribe. Now, they changed that later where you had to actually subscribe to the service. So then that became, you know, that was kind of the precursor to DirecTV and the Dish Network. But if you had a satellite dish, you could get on there for free, get all those cable networks for free. But the thing that I think that the, most people, younger
the
people.
The problem with those dishes were, you. I don't did they. I don't know who's ever going to remove those off your property. Like, how would
exactly,
you get rid of them?
I just offer them to a scrap metal dealer. But the one that I think has been the most astonishing change in technology that I've seen is I bought my first modem in, like, 1984, and it was a 300 baud modem. Now, there were no websites in those days because there wasn't the technology to introduce graphics. And I would access what were called bulletin boards back in the day, and you would have to call a number. It was a dial-up modem. And again, 300 baud is 300 BPS. Your average fast internet these days is, you know, is a gig or 300 megabytes, but this was 300 baud. So, you know, it just crawled along, and you would watch the dots while you were logging on. It would take, you know, a minute or two to log on, and chances are you were calling a long-distance number, and that's back in the days when long-distance cost money. You know, it was, you know, 15 or 20 cents a minute. But all the bulletin boards did was give you ASCII graphics. And they would have, you could play some ASCII graphic games and just very, very primitive forums and other ways that people could interact. There was no email back in the day. But then you had the internet services like CompuServe, Prodigy, then AOL, who really started to introduce graphics. But CompuServe back in the day had no graphics at all. And they had, you know, all sorts of different features, but nowhere near the technology we had today. And if you would have told me when I was crawling along on that 300 baud modem on a CGA monitor that had four colors that we would be to the point where we are today, I would have said there was no way.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I've seen all those changes, and it's been thrilling to me. But I'm glad I've kept up with the changes. None of the new stuff surprises me.
Thank you, Daryl. Good stuff. Man, he was way ahead of us. On that first email account, he sparked a memory. Didn't you feel like everybody had AOL, right? It was always whatever at AOL.com. Yeah, it's like I think we all – was that like the first email – wouldn't 90% of our audience answer AOL as their first email?
Probably.
I just kind of felt like everybody had AOL at first.
I remember when I got to the age and I was probably – 13, 14, something like that, where my parents were like, okay, you can have we'll give you your own AOL account now because instant messaging was big. That had just started, you know, AOL Instant Messenger and had my own email. That was like the greatest day of my life that I didn't have to use my parents' account. I had my own and could talk to my friends and all of that. That was a game changer for me.
Where this came from is on Twitter. I saw it during the break. It's I love the 80s. And the question that was posed was, without saying how old you are, name one thing from your childhood that young people today would not understand, which has sparked this conversation. Let's go to Bob. Bob, you're up next. What would your answer be?
Well, you have to mention rabbit ears. It made me think of something even with TV as well. And now everybody does channel 245. Do you remember Channel U?
Channel U. Yep. No, that one does not ring
a
bell.
You went to U, the UHF,
yep.
Right? And then you could get to channel 35 or 38 or 43, right?
Yeah, because on the dials, unless I'm wrong, it went 2 through 13, and then you hit channel U. And channel U would let you go to a more
This
channel,
is the so dial on the television.
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Telling you.
I forgot about that. Yes. The dial on the television. That is a good
that's
one.
Good.
Here's one. Officer Watson from Clarksville on our text line, 615-737-1025. He actually brings that up. Tin foil on the TV rabbit ears cable box that had about 36 channels, but it was on a dial. So as a kid, you had to stand there changing every channel until your dad liked the show. And my kids complain about getting the remote for me. That is fantastic.
That's
a lot of you have weighed in. Pong. Ron says the Pong game.
Yeah.
That's one.
Have you guys ever seen
it?
You've never played
game.
It, right? I'm sure you've seen it, but you've never played it, right?
Pong?
Oh, no.
No, I'm Pong.
Us, but you guys, like Chase and Marquise, you guys have played Pong?
I haven't played like the original what you had, but they've re-released it, and it's been on like special consoles and stuff. So I've played it before. I mean, I know what it is. And I actually think...
I thought it was the greatest thing ever when it came out.
I think my mom still has an old Atari somewhere.
I used to have to blow all my games on Super Nintendo because half of them never worked.
Now,
so
that's one
thing. I have to like slap them on my hand and like blow on them.
Yeah, kids today don't remember that. Like, we're playing video games because it's all digital or a disc. But I remember because I had the original Nintendo too, and you'd have to, your games would get dusty, and you'd have to pull them out, and you'd have to bang on the machine and blow it out and blow
it out. You
got to
get a cotton
out.
Swab or like a ear, something to clean your ears out,
wear
to clean
out.
The games, and it was bad.
They would wear out eventually. Eventually, the cartridge would just die. It would just be done because of that. But, oh, yeah.
So we got another great one from Skillsy here. We got another outstanding one. Did you guys see it?
I have not seen it.
He texted?
No.
All right, here you go.
What do you
got? Let's picture this. I absolutely did this. You put you have a tape recorder, but it doesn't hook into the radio yet. This is before the days of your stereo system or even a, we used to call it the jam box.
This is a handheld tape recorder, what you're talking about, right? The
handheld tape recorder, right? Mm-hmm. You've got your little clock radio, so you want to record some songs off the radio.
Yep.
Right, Casey Kasem's Top 40 or whatever's going on. So you maybe hear the DJ a little bit, and then your favorite song starts. You hit record. So now you got it on tape. But Hal talks about this concept, and then your mom comes in and yells at you, come on downstairs, lunch is ready. Something. Oh, mom, come on. Because now for the rest of your life, that song, at least until you re-record it, it's got your mom yelling in the background and busting the groove of your song.
And, of course, you had to wait.
This is how we used to have to record songs off the radio.
Listen to the radio to ever hear that song again, right? And they, you had to sit and wait
for
the next time it came on the radio.
Yeah, until it rolls around again.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. And, by the way, he worked in handheld tape recorders. That's a great one. Like those that you guys would never remember. And you plug in the little handheld mic.
Yeah.
A handheld tape recorder.
The first ever any type. Keep in mind that I wanted to do what I'm doing now since I was eight. So my grandfather had it was like a dictaphone is what it was called. But it was a handheld tape recorder that he used for meetings, like to record meetings and have notes. And I used to do little radio shows on that. And that's exactly what it was. It was a handheld tape recorder.
We unfortunately are out of time. We have got tons of people that want to weigh in. We can come back to this, but we have to start the third hour with Jerry Stackhouse. Maybe we ask him how would he answer that. We'll talk to Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse to start the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.